All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com.
Welcome to episode 203 of the DFO Rundown. I'm Jason Greger alongside Frank Saravalli as we inch closer to the Stanley Cup playoffs and the playoff race, Frank, in the East. A few weeks ago, Pittsburgh looked like they were in pretty good position to lock down that first wildcard spot. And now they wake up on March 20th and they're clinging to the edge of it as the Florida Panthers have closed the gap. The island. Now, I know they have games in hand on the Islanders, but, man, the Penguins just got spanked on the weekend. This is a little bit of a surprising twist here for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I would say this is sort of the inopportune time for a three-game losing skid. And it's not just the three-game losses. It's also how they looked in the losses. I mean, getting worked over twice at Madison Square Garden, back-to-back games against the New York Rangers. To me, I think more than anything, what it reinforces is the Pittsburgh Penguins may or may not be a playoff team this season. I just don't, even if they get in, I don't think they're anywhere close to competing for the prize.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah,
I mean, the Rangers we consider sort of an outside threat. And this weekend, I don't know if the lopsided nature in which they won 13 zip and 15 unanswered goals over three straight games, does that change your opinion? It doesn't for me, but the fact that they did it with two different goalies in net and all those things, like, they're a really intriguing team nonetheless.
Oh, I still think the Rangers, like, if they match up against New Jersey, that's going to be a heck of a series. And I think they've got lots of playoff experience. They've got some elite players. Like, I think New York, if I look at Carolina and New Jersey, if I'm just talking top-end elite players, I think the Rangers have the most. And sometimes, you know, you get one or two of those guys at a different point taking over a game. That can be the difference in a series. So I think the Rangers are a dangerous team. You know, their defensive play, but Shesterkin, he hasn't been as consistent as he was last year. But he still had spurts where you're like, oh, this guy's one of the best goalies in the league. And if that shows up in the playoffs, that could be a tough time for either the Devils or the Hurricanes.
Well, I would say both New York teams. The Islanders, if they get in with Sorokin, who I think is going to – look, Ullmark's going to win, but Sorokin's going to garner Vezina votes for sure. It's essentially a statistical toss-up right now as to who gets in. You've got two teams for three spots, and I think the person who does the best job with their playoff modeling is HockeyViz.com and Micah Blake McCurdy, our friend at Ineffective Math on Twitter. Right now, he says Florida is a 57% shot and Pittsburgh is 64. The Islanders have the slight edge at 69. So between those three teams for two spots, like, Florida has just kind of grounded out. Like, they've had some ugly nights this season. They've had some ugly nights in the last, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. And yet here they are playing arguably some of their best hockey of the season at the time when it matters most.
Yeah, and I like Florida's schedule too. And I know they play back to back tonight and tomorrow, but you're in Detroit and you're in Philadelphia, and both of those teams have you know, the realization of playoffs aren't coming, that they've kind of stubbed their toe a little bit. It's always hard to win. We see those teams upsetting all the time, but I just like Florida. I think they have the most skill top to bottom of those three teams in my eyes. And, you know, the Islanders, I give them credit, without Matt Barzal, and there's no update on his injury. It's still dated. It's like the longest day-to-day ever. But I look at the Panthers, and they might have the lowest odds, Frank, but for me, the way they're playing and talent they have on their team, I still think they get in.
Yeah, I mean, a 10% shot. So which team is out? That's the big question.
Well, Pittsburgh, I can't get a read on the Penguins. Like, 2 weeks ago, I'm like, okay, they found their game. You know, it's Crosby, Malkin, they'll solidify things. And then their last few games, you're just like, they don't even look like a playoff team. So,
and Granlund has struggled. And
yeah, the Islanders have played the most games, and they, you know, they're missing obviously one of their best offensive players on a team that doesn't have a lot of offense. So I still am leery, but you're right. Sorokin's the wild card there because he's just so good. They don't have to score a ton of goals to win. So,
And they're going to be a tough out in the playoffs is the truth.
Yes. Yeah. They're a tougher team because of their goaltender. I don't think there's any,
I also think the style of their play too, like, yes, they're pretty defensive minded. They're pretty physical, and they don't give up a lot of goals. So they only really need to be pretty opportunistic in a couple, you know, think back to the coin flip analogy from Tom Dundon. Like, they don't need a whole lot to get over to 51%.
No, that's fair. Like, and their schedule, like, they get more rest here. Like, games in hand can help, but also when you get late in the season, it just means you're playing way more games and, you know, you're playing more back to back in a condensed period of time. So, you know, like, Pittsburgh tonight, Frank, I think is the key game. Ottawa, right? Like, the Sens are, you know, they gave Toronto everything. That was a pretty exciting game on Saturday, and they're not rolling over. Then they got Colorado and Dallas. Like, this is a tough week for Pittsburgh.
Yeah. I mean, Pittsburgh, it's kind of the same story. Like, they just look old and slow.
Yeah. But, hey, speaking of the Penguins, you see the story. It's interesting, you know, Steve Simmons writing that Pittsburgh would be interested in Kyle Dubas. Or, you know, when I see something like that late in the season, Frank, doesn't your spidey sense go off a little bit and you're wondering, like, why is this story coming out now?
That was kind of the big thing to me reading the big headline was, I'll just read it to you. Simmons says GM Kyle Dubas could be hot commodity if let go by Leafs. And I don't think there's any breaking news in that. Like, I've said before that I think other teams will actually move ahead and fire their general manager if Kyle Dubas is available. And I get the sort of natural inclination to speculate once there's a GM opening, as there is right now with Chuck Fletcher being dispatched in Philly. You know, Barry Trotz is obviously taking over for David Poyle. There's, you know, some uncertainty in Ottawa with new ownership, and Calgary with Brad Treliving also in the last year of his deal. But I just thought it was really odd that it was so specific, in which Simmons said, quote, one of those teams is thought to be the Pittsburgh Penguins, where general manager Ron Hextall is in difficulty and the status of club president Brian Burke is uncertain. The Pens have relatively new ownership in Fenway Sports Group, which includes LeBron James as a minority shareholder, along with bigger money players like John Henry and Tom Werner. It makes sense. I mean, Boston and the Red Sox, the way they seem to have run their operation seems to be like almost exactly what the Leafs have modeled their team after in terms of the way they think about it and the way they go about it process wise. But I think to me, the big thing is you hit it on the head. Why now? Like, everyone's known all season long that Kyle Dubas is in the final year of his deal. Why is this being talked about with 4 weeks to go? And where's this narrative coming from? And why all of a sudden are the Pittsburgh Penguins a team that's being connected to Kyle Dubas?
Like, it can't just be suddenly because Hextall's on the hot seat, can it?
I don't think so. What is the connection here? Is there a connection between Kyle Dubas and the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Like, I wonder in Toronto, like, if they win a round, I don't see any way that they let him go unless he chooses not to go, right? Unless he wants a different one. But I would think if they won a playoff round, he'd be like, okay, my plan, it's in place. We're taking steps forward. And you know what? We're just going to keep hammering away at it.
So, my brain is going to explode if we hear one more thing about winning one more round.
Yeah.
Who cares? That means you're a solid 12 wins away.
Yeah.
From out of 16. Like, you're basically no closer. So because you want to, like, anyone talking about winning a round has lost the plot. Like, if there is not meaningful movement towards the Toronto Maple Leafs getting closer to winning a Stanley Cup, I'm not advocating for anything to happen. I'm just saying it's madness to think that this team could lose in the first round for a seventh consecutive year. Has anyone ever done that before? Has any team lost 7 years in a row in the first round? I'm sure there's somewhere someone in the 80s, but yeah.
Wow.
Even then, like,
I don't think so.
It's madness. Question. It's madness to think, oh, because we got over the hump into the second round, that therefore it should be looked at all of a sudden differently as if it's any better than losing in the first. Do you ever hear the Carolina Hurricanes celebrating the fact that they've won a round each of these last number of years?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that. And they're in Carolina, not the so-called self-proclaimed center of the hockey universe.
Now, I'm looking at, trying to find it, but now you could be right, Frank. Oh, look, that's a good question.
I can't think of a team that's lost seven consecutive years in the first round. But again, my point is not the first round. It's that if you think that winning four games in the playoffs is an improvement, it doesn't make any sense to me. You've lost the plot, if that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm looking at, I'm even going back to the original six and I don't see it. So yeah, it's a good question. I'll have to look that up. So you look at the East and we've talked about their playoff race. In the West, it's very different. You've got Winnipeg, Nashville, and Calgary, and it's like they're tripping over each other, Frank, in the turtle race. Because now Winnipeg did have a big victory over Nashville, but they couldn't get it done in regulation. So they win, but they only win halfway, right? They get 2 points. The Preds get one. And Nashville, if you go on games in hand, then they still, in theory, if they win them all, but they have to win them all, and that's a long shot. You know, they're 76, Winnipeg's 81, and Calgary's in the middle at 77. They have a game in hand on the Jets. If they win that game in hand, then they're 2 points back. There's lots of ifs, but, you know, and then even Seattle, like the Kraken have slowly, I think they'll be able to hang on, but you know, the Jets are only two back of the Kraken. Now, Seattle has games in hand, but I just, like, it's kind of become a real turtle race between Winnipeg, Calgary, Nashville, and I'm not sure ultimately it matters if any of those teams get in.
It's a pillow fight. That's what it feels like. I mean, we are 4 weeks away on Friday from the conclusion of the regular season, and if you're watching the West playoff race, you're kind of just yawning. Like, okay, someone put someone else out of their misery here. The fact that no one has hit the Nashville Predators yet in the face with a shovel and buried them after they sold off at the deadline, I mean, it just speaks to, I think right now, how inauthentic or unauthentic Winnipeg's chances are to actually do damage in the playoffs. And I know we could just have the same conversation about Sorokin and the Islanders, and you could say the same about Hellebuck and the Jets. I just, like, I don't have anything that I can point to in the last, we're approaching 2 months. Like, it's the end of January that the Winnipeg Jets slide began. They're still comfortably in the driver's seat in terms of the playoffs. at least in terms of chances. And this, the Kraken are even way north of that. The Kraken are at 90%. The Jets are at 63%, Preds 30%, and Flames 20%. Winnipeg's still comfortably in the driver's seat for that final spot. It's just, it's turtle race, pillow fight, whatever you want to call it. It's ugly to watch.
Yeah, I don't know. I was in Calgary for a buddy's birthday, and we're at the bar, and we're watching the Dallas-Calgary game, and it was an entertaining game if you like offense, but in Calgary, knowing what had happened, and just like every time you thought they were going to get control of the game, they would just gift it right back. It was nuts.
Story of their season.
Yeah, they just don't look like a team, and the fact that like the Flames are really only there because they're able to lose in overtime. Like, it's mind-blowing. What, they got 15 overtime/shootout losses? 15!
They do just enough to keep you interested in hanging around. It's almost like it's the worst kind of tease because they actually have the talent, I think, on their roster to do so much better.
Well, yeah, I think they should be better than what they are right now, no question. So, because I think they've been to overtime now. I think it's 19 times. So, out of 70 games.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is not that Dallas is much better. Dallas is going overtime. They got 13 overtime losses. The difference is they've won games. They got 38 wins. Calgary has 31.
Yeah, right? The difference is Dallas might win their division.
Yeah, well, Colorado has, they're sticking around. The playoff run, Colorado's won 5 in a row, and we've talked about this for months that, the Avs could just go on a 10-game winning streak, and well, they're halfway there now, and that's a team. But even the Avs, when I look at their team, Frank, they're not as good as they were last year. Obviously, injuries are playing a significant role, and like they're
not
still
having Kadri. I think is still
Kadri, no Landeskog. I think they're still dangerous, but they're not the team last year. Like, and Daryl Sutter, I thought was accurate when he said it'd be a waste of 8 days. They're not that. Like, Boston could be that team in the first round of the playoffs this year. Like, if you're Pittsburgh, you got to get the 7th seed. I don't care who you are in Florida, the Islanders, Pittsburgh. Getting the 8th seed is literally an 8-day waste, I would argue, in the East.
Maybe not to your owner, who could certainly enjoy the extra $4 million pump.
Sure.
But I would push against your notion that I think Colorado, even without Kadri, is like almost as good.
But like, there's no Landeskog either, man.
But Landeskog will be back for the playoffs. So I don't know how long it's going to take him to get up to speed, but he's been skating for a while now and like a solid month.
Yeah.
By the time the playoffs roll around, that's another month. Like, that guy is going to be ready to roll. And you take him and with how well, some other guys have played in his absence, I think that team is equally as dangerous to get through the West as they were last year.
Well, Colorado Edmonton repeat in the West final would be electric hockey. The orders are better.
Inject that into my veins.
The orders are better this year than they were last year. And if Nurse and Draisaitl stay healthy, that's another big addition. Like, Ekholm's being a huge addition to that team. Their depth scorers, though, are all showing up and producing. And then obviously you've got McDavid on another level right now. Like, he's got 134 points, Frank. Like, you look at this week for Connor McDavid. Like, I still think at times people, I honestly, Frank, I didn't think 150 point season was likely again in the NHL a few years ago. You got to remember, like, it was only 5 years ago the guy was winning the scoring title with 87 points.
Right? Yeah, like, I was there. It was Jamie Benn, 86 points.
Yeah, 87.
It was 10 years ago.
Yeah. And it was, no, not even. I think it was 2015.
That's 8 years ago.
Yeah. Like, it was, you think about where offense has come and what McDavid's doing. Like, he's only the 18th player to have 134 points. And they've got San Jose and Arizona this week. McDavid's averaging 2 points a game in March. Historically, he's always been good in March. You just look, by the time he gets, let's say, to Thursday, and he just does 4 points a game, now he's down to the 13th player to ever have that many points. Like, every number he gets, it just keeps going into this smaller and smaller. And he's on pace for 156, which puts him in Gretzky and Lemieux category. Like, those guys, they used to be a video game number. And people, I remember young kids would look at Gretzky's stats and be like, well, that can't be real. Like, because he was leading by 70 and 80 points. McDavid might win the scoring race by 40 points.
Dude, my mind is still blown about that Jamie Benn 87-point season. You know what the craziest part about that is? He had 10 points in his last three games, including 4 points in the last day of the season.
Yeah.
He went 4-3-3 in his last three games. He literally had no business, and no one was talking about him winning the Art Ross that year, and just came from out of the clear blue sky on the last day of the regular season to win it.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome for him. And hey, Ben's had a bounce back year in Dallas. I'll give him a lot of credit. But yeah, it just shows you how lacking there was in offense not that long ago. Like 8 years isn't that long.
Right? No, like, and I thought that was the new norm. That's why I said that, because I was like, hey, that's kind of interesting. And you're thinking, man, just getting to 100 again would be an accomplishment. Closing in on 150, like where? So it really is mind blowing.
Yeah, like he's at 150 and Drysdale's on pace. Drysdale's second in the league and he's already 30 points back. Yeah. So, you know, probably will make that gap 35. Who knows the way McDavid's going? Like it's exciting to watch if you like offense. You know, the Oilers' defensive game is still a little bit of a question mark, right? But you look at offensively, the amount of goals they're scoring, like their offense has improved every month. They're not, and it's funny, there's lots of teams around the league. It used to be, Frank, that offense would slow down as the season goes along. That's not the case again for the second year. Offense is up as we get into March. Like there's more goals now than there were earlier in the year.
You know, the whole offense debate is so interesting. Like, where does it come from and when will goalies catch up? That's my question.
Well, I think what's happened here is the players have finally caught up, right?
That's what I'm saying. The players now have a clear advantage. Shooters now with the speed, with the ability to move the puck laterally, knowing that it's so incredibly difficult for goalies to move. And goalies are more athletic, bigger, and have more equipment than they've ever had. When are they going to catch up? Like, at some point they will again, I think. But what's going to be the next iteration or innovation in net that changes the structure, changes the paradigm?
I think they're going to go back and you're going to see more hybrid goalies because they're getting crushed right now going in butterfly. And the good shooters are like, okay, I'll go upstairs. And they go upstairs. Goalies are 6'5", and they're getting beat over their shoulders just because there's an inch and the accuracy of the scores today. Like we've seen it repeatedly. How many guys, there's 2 inches in the top shelf, bank, goal. Mm-hmm. And the goalie's like, well, I play the odds. I was in a really good position. So I think you might see the return a little bit of the hybrid, Frank. That's the only way I can see it changing.
Yeah, I think it's you better to have this conversation with Kevin Woodley, but I think the reverse VH, the RVH, has been a huge detractor too in terms of the way the position is played. It was all the rage for a while.
Yeah.
And I think now it's a disaster.
Well, I think teams have figured it out and it helps by having skills coaches for these players. Like they're not just training to get faster. They're training to be more efficient in how they shoot, where they shoot, when they shoot, you know, the advancements in videos. I just think it helps. And you've talked about it, Frank. There's more lateral passing now. The game's not as physical because it's fast. And, you know, like we see guys who are really good players. You make one wrong turn. You're like 2 inches. Boom. Guys are going by you across the league. Like, look at Clayton Keller right now in Arizona. And by the way, shout out to the Arizona Coyotes, Frank. They're just moving up the standings. I'm sure their management team is like up chucking at every game. They've won 4 in a row now. They've moved ahead. I think they got the 7th lowest odds, their best odds, whichever way you look at it, to win the Connor Bedard. And, you know, Clayton Keller has 28 more points than anybody else on Arizona. He has quietly had, he's got 75 points. He's had a really good season for the Coyotes. Really good. He's like a freedom fighter out there.
It almost feels like their whole team is freedom fighters fighting to get out of Arizona. It's kind of what it feels like. Do you feel like with each passing game that they win, that, you know, whoever's the star player that night or collects one of the three stars, there you see Bill Armstrong crossing his name off of next year's roster? And I say that totally tongue in cheek, but like kind of not really. Like the old accidental on purpose. Oops, we won again.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I do wonder if you're Clayton Keller, how long are you like, are you eventually going to be like Jacob Chychrun and hey, enough's enough here?
I don't know. Like, it's hard because you picked to sign that deal. Like, how do you?
Yeah, no, fair.
You are the one who signed the 7-year deal. No one put a gun to your head to do it. And you know what? The other part of it is, it was an 8-year deal. Excuse me, 8 years, $57.2 million. And the crazy part about that contract is, and how well he's playing now, is for the last couple seasons, everyone has looked at that contract as an albatross. Now it might actually be pretty good value.
Well, he's on pace. He's going to be an 80-point player.
Well, when he had he had 35 in 56 games, like everyone was saying, you paid this guy seven, and that was signed by John Chyka, not by Bill Armstrong. But everyone was saying, you did what? He signed that deal so early. He signed it September 4th, 2019. So in his 2019-20 season, that same year he signed the extension, he only had 44 points in 70 games. Then the next year, the first year of the deal, he comes through with 35 and 56, and you're going, oh man, this is bad. And then last year was pretty good, and this year obviously is great.
Yeah, well, that's one where, yeah, you pay for it and you hope that it pans out down the road. And, hey, there's contracts like that where guys are winners, but you're right. That was a little bit of a maybe, you know, wasn't even a 60-point player, 50-point player. It's a big projection, but, hey, he's living up to it right now. And, you know, I watched the Coyotes. They got a really good goaltender too. But I'm just – it's amazing to see how they're playing here down the stretch. It's like they're literally, you know, just, you know, fisting their own GM in a sense because they're just crushing them. Like, honestly, Frank, like, there is no better way to – that's why I've always said it's hard to tank because the players don't tank. I would bet – you know the old Major League, Frank? God. Remember the movie Major League?
Of course.
Right? And with every win, you know, they're taking off the – a piece of the
owner's clothing, yeah.
Exactly. The Coyotes might not have that in the room, but they essentially have that in the room right now. For sure they are. Because they don't – they're like, screw him, we want to win. And they're showing them, you know what, next year add rather than subtract. Good for
that. That ain't happening. Check out their salary cap structure. Oh, I know. It ain't happening.
Yeah. And that'd be, but it just illustrates that
they might not even be playing in Arizona next year.
Well, that's the other thing. That'd probably be a good thing for them.
It wouldn't change the dynamic in terms of the overall process. Like, you know, they're clearly down a certain path, and just the sheer number of draft picks stockpiled, you know, at some point in these next number of years, they should have a pretty good shot to be a lot better. So they're not going to change the timeline, but what it should do is certainly inject a different feel to this team.
But hey, speaking of, you know what, look at their home record, Frank.
Wait, can I, before you do that, can I, since you did bring up fisting, can I make a hard right turn? I don't know if you saw this, but there was a viral video on St. Paddy's Day. It was actually in my local market on the local Channel 6 newscast. They were talking about drinking, but the poor woman broadcaster, she made a comment like, now sending it over to someone who loves getting double fisted. And that's how she,
I seen it. They're like,
that's how she got into the segment. Oh. Yeah. We're talking about beer. Okay.
Yes.
Glad that you could clarify that. And thank you. Now over to someone who likes getting double fisted.
Yeah. It's a great throw. It's a great throw.
Speaking of fists, if I was on that broadcast and you said that, I would walk over and punch you in the face on live television. If you told me that I liked getting double fisted.
But wasn't she on location? You can't.
No, they were in the studio.
Oh, in studio. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, hey, speaking of the Coyotes, though, they got 20 home wins in 34 games this year. Like, that's become a really hard place to win. Stunning.
I think it's an opposite effect of everyone just thinks the team is bad. I don't think it has anything to do with the environment.
You think? Yeah, you could be right.
I think they've kind of lost... Like, it's kind of like I thought it would be, not to toot my horn. Like, there would be a really cool factor to the Mullet Arena, and I think everyone's sort of first trip through there, oh, this is exciting, it's different, there's actually an environment in Arizona, cool, college, you know, fans everywhere, it's got a different vibe. But if you're in the Central Division and this is your third trip to Arizona, like, you're just like, okay, what? What is this in the NHL?
Yeah, potentially. It's funny because they got the ninth best home record in the NHL.
Like, I just think it has more to do with where they've been in the standings. Teams saying this, you know, we don't need our A game today because this team's not very good. It's human nature.
Yeah, you could be right. But anyway, actually, for Coyotes fans, Frank, think about it. They don't have much to cheer for, but at least when they go to the home rink right now, they got a pretty good chance of seeing a win.
I mean, that's good for all 4,300 of them. Like, good for them.
That's true. Well, if they're all Coyotes fans, but I just like, I watched the story. It's the most unexpected one down the stretch. Usually the Coyotes are limping down the stretch. And right now they're actually climbing the standings. Them and Canucks fans are probably like, what are you guys doing? Because their odds by every day, like honestly, they've kept past Philly and you know, they could catch St. Louis or Vancouver before the season's out.
What an absolute failure that would be. Oh, yeah. Like, honestly, I don't like whatever no, it I is. That, like, if you're ever in a spot where this is the year to go all out and your team is no good for the year and was designed to be no good, winning games now is an utter failure.
Oh, I agree with you.
And look, you can never tell players to tank. They'll never do it. But what you can do is start. You could take players out of the lineup. You could do whatever. Send guys down. You could whatever you need to do. Healthy scratch, you can change it up.
No, tough one. Tough one. Let's bring in Ty Yaremchuk. Ty, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm somewhat recovered from the Oilers Nation 15th birthday bash this weekend. We have...
How many shots out of the ice luge did you do?
Yeah, so for people that didn't see, we had a big block of ice with the Oilers Nation logo, and there was a funnel at the top, then kind of a nozzle on the side, and you could do shots out of that. So I'm not like a germaphobe, but after watching a handful of random people put their whole mouths around the tube at the end instead of just letting it waterfall in, I was kind of like, I'm good. But everyone was having fun with it, so I guess that's all that mattered.
Is it sick that I was watching the Instagram videos and that's like exactly what I was like, I would never ever do a shot off of that.
We had like alcoholic wipes and I was like, maybe I'm okay. But we still had a great time. We have 22 Germans in town from OilersNation.de. And they were there partying. They closed down the bar until about 2:30 the night before, and then we're right back there at noon for our watch party for the afternoon game against the Kraken. They're absolutely machines.
Friends drinking a lot of Steins.
Oh yeah, and they actually brought Jay custom Stein, so he was walking around with it was great.
Friends don't let friends drink with Germans.
They go hard and they don't stop, which I've loved. They've been at Edmonton now for about a week, and some of the stories are pretty good. Let's get into buy or sell, fill in the blank, brought to you by our friends over at PointsBet Canada. All the odds you need as we head down the stretch here in the NHL season, available on PointsBet Canada. You guys have been talking about the playoff races now that things are not starting to get more clear, but some teams are falling out of the race. Of the teams still in, the GM that's facing the most heat if their team doesn't get in is blank, Frank.
Ron Hextall. If he doesn't get in, the Pittsburgh Penguins do not get in. I believe he will be launched into the sun.
All right.
Yeah, well, I don't want to pick the same one, so I will say I think it's a toss-up. The two Canadian GMs, Cheval Dayoff's been there for a long time, and Brad Treliving's in the last year of his contract, so it's kind of an easy one if they miss it, but I think both of them are feeling the heat. Obviously, we know Nashville's got a new GM, so we can't include them.
Ain't nobody got the balls to say Lou Lamoriello and the New York Islanders.
Just saying. I don't think if they miss,
Should be. Like, just from an objective nature, tripling down or quadrupling down with this Bo Horvat extension for a team that was long in the tooth and can't score.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like, you and you trade for this guy and you still miss? Like, so wait a second. You gave up your first round pick that's now going to a team that has better odds and they might be able to sneak into the lottery. Like, what? And there's no heat? I'm sorry. Like, the fact that it's not talked about is out of sheer deference and respect to the Hall of Famer, which I understand and appreciate, but it should be fairly speculated about just in the same breath as Ron Hextall.
Yeah, you know what's, I guess, Frank, the reason I didn't think of them, I didn't have expectations of the Islanders this year, which is maybe that says he should be on the hot seat anyway, but Pittsburgh.
They had them. Yeah, isn't that did. The point? They thought that they're a playoff team. They added like a playoff team. They handled last summer like a playoff team. I mean, to think that you go through this season and, they're like, okay, so here's my point with the Islanders and Penguins. Because of the teams that are nipping at their heels, Buffalo, Detroit, potentially Ottawa. Tell me, with those teams missing, what year they get back in again?
Yeah, fair point. That's a fair question.
Yeah, it's a good answer. Out west, right now,
so why didn't you pick them?
Because I said we're me and you are minus 10 and the no balls open. So that's where we're at. I said ain't nobody got the balls.
Out west, there are currently six teams on pace to hit the 100-point mark. Seattle is close. They're on pace for like 98.2, 98.4, something like that. So how many teams in the west, blank teams in the west, hit the 100-point mark, Jason?
Well, Colorado's rolling, so I'm definitely taking them. Edmonton's got a pretty favorable schedule, so yes, I'll say all six.
All six. Not Seattle, though. They won't quite get there.
No.
Yeah, they'd have to go 7-6, or no, sorry, 8-5, I think, down the stretch or something like that. Nah. To get
in. Which is very doable for them, but, well, they'd have to go 8-4-1, yeah. Right? I think so. Yeah. I don't see them going getting that hot down the stretch.
I'm going to say six as well, and I'm going to say that the idea of 100 points being any sort of benchmark for the NHL right now is an absolute crock of shit.
Okay. Apologies.
No. I'm. It's not a knock on the question. It's just like this idea of like, well, we set a points record, or look at all these teams touting, like, check out how many wins we had. Like, the way the NHL is structured now is obliterating all of the records for teams by both points and wins, and it doesn't make any sense to keep using that as a tout or a benchmark.
That's fair.
What do you think, Jay?
No, I think it's totally fair. Because of the loser point does it all day long. There's no question.
You have the team getting 20 overtime points. Like, come on, get out of here.
Yeah, that is crazy. Like, the leader right now, I mean, 15 for the Flames. That's insane that they just keep dragging games out and mooching points like that. While Dallas has 13 as well. That might win them their division, is just the amount of OT wins they've scooped up. All right, third one I got for you. As you guys know, David Pastrnak off the market for pending UFAs this year. So I thought I'd take a look at who could be out there and maybe who's made themselves the most money. And boy, it's a wildly depressing UFA class coming up. The top five in terms of goals this year for pending UFAs: Patrice Bergeron, Jason Zucker, Alex Killorn, Michael Bunting, and Max Domi. Domi only has 19 on the year. The top five for points are Killorn, Bergeron, Krejci, Domi, and Patrick Kane. My question to you guys is, hearing those guys, hearing who's been the most productive, blank is the free agent who's made themselves the most money this year. Jason?
Oh, God. It's a good question, man. The list isn't great. I'm going to say no one, because you look at Bergeron or Krejci, they could get a raise if they wanted, but yeah. I think they want to win, so they're not going to do it.
They're not leaving either, so they're not. So, I don't even. They're, when my top 50 free agents comes out next week, they're not going to be on the board.
Yeah.
Like, no one's going to pay Killorn a ton of money. Like, the only name that I thought maybe would make sense is like a Bunting. I don't know. Frank, is there one that jumps out to you?
Yeah, I would say. To me, the person who's made themselves the most money this season has been Dmitry Orlov, especially after the trade. I'm sort of flirting with, for number one on my board, it's potentially Kane by sheer name recognition. And even with his somewhat pedestrian season for his own standards, does him getting his hip fixed, you know, is he back to normal next season as a free agent? Like, I think that's a legitimate and fair question to ask. But I would say the one guy that no one is talking about that might get the most money in free agency, maybe outside of Bunting, is Damon Severson of the New Jersey Devils. I see Severson somewhere in the 5 to 6 year range at $6 million. So, Damon Severson will be somewhere in my top three as well.
I would actually look at RFAs, I think, more so than UFAs.
I've done a bit of that the last few days, but there are certainly some interesting RFAs. I would just say that teams are obviously always inclined to keep them. So,
oh yeah, no, not what I mean was those guys are getting raises even from their own team, right? Like Timo Meyer's getting a big raise, right? So
Vince Dunn,
yeah, Vince Dunn possibly as well. But you know, defenseman is probably the year. And I've always argued for a long time, free agency is rarely the place that you really want to build your team. You might get one good signing in there that really pans out, a big name. You're better off to go bargain basement shopping and wait a week after free agency, and you can get a depth guy for $1 million and he'll be just as productive as the guy that everybody raced for and signed for $3 million.
So since joining the Boston Bruins, Dmitry Orlov has 12 points in 11 games. So north of a point per game, he's playing 21 minutes a night. And if I know he's older than Severson by 3 years, but if the Bruins go on a deep run, Dmitry Orlov will be well paid.
Fair. You know, the one guy who might, because he's got 15 goals and he's making 900K. If you look at a guy, like if we just look at percentage of increasing, Nick Bjugstad has got 16 goals. He might finish with 18. He's going from 900K to
he's not getting paid though.
Well, but let's say he goes to 1.8. He's doubling his salary.
It doesn't count for someone that was already making four something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bad contract a few years ago. So,
well, he was at 4.1 for 6 years under Dale Tallon.
Yeah. But if you look at a guy who at the start of the year, Frank, at 900K, people are like, Jesus, he might be out of the league. Now he might be able to get back.
Anyone that pays Nick Bjugstad this year, like, please allow my brain to explode. Okay.
Not a Bjugstad fan, eh?
Let me just read you his last number of years and their goal totals. 2019, 14. 2020, 1. He was injured, played 13 games. 2021, 6. 2022, 7. And was a healthy scratch in all 6 Minnesota Wild playoff games. Scoring 15 goals this year in the regular season, I'm sorry, like, it's like, give your head a shake.
How much you want to bet someone pays him 1.8?
Oh, 1.8, but I thought you meant like going to 3.
No, I don't think he goes to 3, but he's still doubling his salary. That's a pretty big increase.
Yeah, I mean, just based on sheer numbers, sure.
It'll be another guy too, like, I mean, if you want to call it the old Ville Leino effect, but a good playoffs will get someone paid. I wonder about a guy like Bertuzzi. Like, will some GM watch him in a Bruins jersey, go nuts, run people over, be a pain in the ass, score a couple of big goals, and be like, screw it, I'm paying that guy. Big coin.
It's someone will, but it's the back injury that is no one's ever questioned his game. It's no one wants to take the risk. And someone will, based on his playoff, if it's as good as I think it might be.
Fair. All right, there you go. That is a wrap on this week's edition of Buy or Sell, brought to you by our friends at PointsBet Canada.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Frank, before we go, what did you make of the James Reimer and the Santa, like the San Jose Sharks organization? You know, basically their whole timeline was on educating about the LGBTQT plus and everything else. Like they had some really interesting stats that I never knew about. And I thought it was pretty informative. And to me, it's all about education. I love learning stuff. I thought it was great. James Reimer statement is one that's rather perplexing to me. I know Brian Burke's come out and said, you know, I don't really think these guys understand really what they're talking about. Like you can respect the guy. Hey, he's allowed to have his thought process, but I don't think his statement really helped his case.
Oh boy. This is a nuanced answer that I don't think can be properly explained in 4 minutes or however long we have. But I will say I have two thoughts on it, and they're two almost contrasting issues. One, please don't hide behind religion and your very literal interpretation of the Bible, because that means you're also ignoring all the parables and scriptures in which Jesus spent with the prostitutes and the lepers and everyone else that was cast off in society.
Yeah.
So that's one. I would say number two is, I guess that I'm trying to think of like the most easy way to explain what I'm thinking and feeling, which is it's like he, all of that said, he still maintains a choice. And I think part of my issue with the way our society has evolved in general, not just hockey, is that for some of the people that consider themselves to be the most tolerant, is that the way they demonize people, particularly using social media, who don't want to be involved, they become the most intolerant. Like they become exactly what they don't want to be. And I think that's really problematic. So I hope that's a clean way of explaining how I feel about that. I think there's a lot of things that the NHL gets wrong. But I think one thing that they've gotten right through this process, starting with Provorov to now, is that they don't condemn, in the sense that Gary Bettman had this way of explaining it the other day at GM meetings, and I'm paraphrasing, but essentially it was along the lines of, if you donate to three charities that you are really in favor of and support, and someone comes up to you and says, hey, I want you to donate to this charity. And you say, no, no, I'm good. And they say, but it's a charity. Why wouldn't you support it? And your answer is, well, like I already support three other ones, so I'm not going to support this one. I'm good. That's his way of explaining the James Reimer, Ivan Provorov decision and choice. And I think that's a fair one in that you... I don't agree with how he's gone about it. Like just come out and say, like, I'm not participating. And I commend the Sharks actually for going ahead with their Pride Night and doing, wearing the jerseys and saying, you know what, if you don't want to be part of it, you need to stand up and explain yourself. And that's fine. Like you have the right to make the choice, but you also have the right to answer to the questions and whatever consequences may come from it. So I think this is a really complicated conversation. Again, not something that can be boiled down in 3 or 4 minutes, but those are my general vibes and thoughts.
As somebody, Frank, you know what? I was raised Catholic. We went to church. There's lots of things that I love about religion and church. And then there's like, to me, I like faith. I think it's good to have a sense of believing in something that's bigger than you. I think that's all great. But I was also raised, we questioned a lot of things. And, you know, we had conversations around the dinner table and, you know, like you look at, and if you just look at it from a pure, take emotion out of it and you look at translation and how many things are lost in translation, the language has been changed so many different times, to think that that's exactly what was written how many thousands of years ago. I think you're delusional if you think that it's exactly what was stated. You were bang on and talking about, you can't, to me, if you use the Bible, I can find anything. I can go through scripture and find one quote that's going to back up my statement on this, but then there's another one in there that will completely reverse it. So I agree with you wholeheartedly on your comment about don't hide behind it because it doesn't really make sense to me. It says
that's
right in
the Bible. That's not what Jesus would have done. Like, I yes. firmly believe that. Having read 100%. It, I was raised Catholic. I'm not super religious anymore, but that's not how I view it. And that's not basically what was taught to me over 18 years of Catholic education.
And then my concern, and I agree with you, is the demonization of somebody who says, hey, you know what? Now I can respect James Reimer. I don't have to agree with him.
Yeah.
By saying, okay, he's allowed that opinion. I would like to have a conversation, a deep, long, drawn out conversation.
It's not what I would have done. I would have worn the jersey and supported and whatever, but at the same time, I'm not going to sit here and say James Reimer is a bad guy or James Reimer is wrong. Or that's what makes this world go round, is that everyone's different. Everyone has different thoughts. Everyone thinks different things. And just because you don't support it doesn't mean you are against it.
Yeah, he's not doing anything. Like, here's the mistake. And my one beef about this that I found, that all those, you know, the supporters, where all they talked about was James Reimer. They didn't focus on any of the stuff, very rarely, on what the Sharks did. And all of the educational quotes and statistics and all the support they had from the majority of the organization. You think of all the players, there's one player out of a 20-man roster, right? So that's 5%, okay? One guy. So now they focus on the 5% who aren't, where the 95% are supportive. Well, newsflash, in the world, there's not 100% support on almost anything. So rather than get all upset and be like, well, if everybody doesn't agree, well, then that sucks. Because now you're missing the point. And now you've overlooked all of the good that the Sharks did and all of the people that supported it. And around the league, you know, it's no different than Van Riemsdyk and others in Philadelphia. And because too many people are just like, I'm going to get mad and yell and scream. And I want to make James Reimer feel like crap. Well, guess what? He's not going to change.
And he doesn't care. If he cared, he would have just worn the jersey. Yes, he doesn't care what you think.
Any writer or anybody who's a proponent thinks that that's going to change. You don't need James Reimer. You don't need him. But
you see all these stories call out the bigot for what he is. Like, what? Like, if you disagree with his stance and you don't like it, that's fine. But like, now we get into a name-calling situation. Like, I just think, that's the easiest way I can explain it, is that people who purport themselves to be really tolerant and accepting and inclusive then are the first people to demonize, which then makes them intolerant. And it's everything that they didn't want to be in. So that's where they lose me.
Yeah, to me, the next player, and trust me, there'll be other players that do it. Don't even mention them. Focus on all the good, which is 95% of the people that are supporting your cause. Focus on them, because I think they missed the boat. And there's way too much about, like, James. And here's the thing. So James Reimer doesn't wear the jersey. He's not spreading hate to anybody. He's not. Now, some other people might say, yeah, I agree with James Reimer. Yes, of course, because there's going to be other people that agree with James Reimer. You're never going to get 100% people agreeing with you. So if you keep worrying about that, you can focus on it in one article, but I agree with you. The name calling, I thought, went too far. And I think, unfortunately, it overlooked a lot of the real good that was done by the Sharks.
And if you think everyone's in your camp, let me remind you of this fact, because if you only see the world through one prism, Ivan Provorov's jersey sold out after the Flyers Pride Night. So if you think that people only see the world your way and that's the only way the world can be seen, that it's clearly not the case. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying anyone's right or wrong. I'm not saying it's cool that his jersey sold out. I'm just saying the fact that it did tells you something, that not everyone sees the world the way you do.
Not everybody likes Frank Saravalli. Not everybody likes Jason Gregor. And if I focus on the people that don't like me, you just get beaten down. You focus on the people that support you and like you. And it's just,
how many hate listeners do you think we have? People that can't stand either one of us that just listen just because.
Well, there's probably a few. Well, the best part is someone hates
I see them in like my, you. I see them in my Twitter feed every once in a while when I say something, particularly about a certain team.
Well, Columbus fans, they're right, Frank. Columbus fans, let's go Jacket fans. I love it. The fifth line. I got to go to Columbus for a road trip.
Can't Columbus,
wait till they win. When they win the Bedard lottery. I think if they win the Bedard lottery, I might go there for season opener.
I was thinking this weekend watching the NCAA tournament, how tormented this selection committee must have been with like the absolute shitbag cities that they picked to host the tournament this weekend. Like, seriously, go through the list. It was like Albany, Sacramento, Des Moines, Columbus. Like, could you imagine? Hey, we're making it to the big time NCAA tournament. Boom. Here's your ticket to Albany. What? Sorry. Unnecessary piling on.
I've never been to Albany, so I can't comment.
Yeah, 2 minute minor for Frank for unnecessary piling on in Columbus. I like Columbus. It's fun. I actually like going there. I just contend that it's one of the most anonymous franchises in pro sports.
Until they get Bedard.
All right.
Let's go Bedard. Just think about it. Bedard and the BJs, they'll be killing it. Frank, have yourself a great day, and we will talk to you next week. We're taking Thursday off, so we will talk to you next Monday.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
All right, hockey fans, listen up because we've got something special coming your way this playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and let me tell you, it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of those questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you gotta pick the winning team. That sounds simple, right? But there's more. You gotta decide if the total amount of goals in the game will be over or under a certain amount, and that's where the real strategy starts to kick in. Next up, you're picking who's gonna find the back of the net first, and you're gonna wanna be careful because that's one that could be cooked early on in the game. And finally, you gotta predict which period is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That's up to you to decide. Now let's talk about prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? For the daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards to treat yourself to some fresh nation gear, and you might even win a jersey from your favorite team. And for the big dogs, those who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.